Hey everyone, I'm Tony, your host of the Grounded Podcast. This podcast is all about sustainable living, urban and not so urban living, homesteading and healthy eating with a healthy dash of permaculture principles and environmentalism. This podcast came from a blog I started nearly two decades ago after accidentally stumbling into gardening while in my mid-teens three decades ago. And I've been hooked ever since. Now, aside from being a foodie, hippie, hipster, film pundit, traveler, 80s enthusiast, self-proclaimed chef, and I do mean self-proclaimed chef, I'm also a homesteader, an urban homesteader. Now, most importantly, I'm a father, small business owner, organic gardener, and just too much more to name here. So welcome to my sustainable yet attainable home garden. Welcome to the Grounded Podcast, Michelle.
Hi, Tony.
How are you?
I'm great. How are you tonight?
Great, great. Tonight is going to be a fun, fun topic, right?
I think fun for some.
Fun for some? No, fun for all. Climate control. Diving into this and what we can do. Little small things we can do to curb it now.
Sure.
So... what do you got on your list? Okay. Before we jump fully into it.
Yes.
Okay. So we've got like these extensive lists, right? And we're just figuring out, okay, how are we going to fit this all into an hour? Because we don't want to make this a 3-hour podcast episode. So what we determined to do behind the scenes is we're going to split this up into two parts. So one episode will come out 1 week, and maybe a couple days after we're going to have another part two to this, you know, topic come out, because I think it's really an important topic to cover,
right,
as much as we possibly can, as deeply as we possibly can, right?
Sure.
So I'm going to let you jump off tonight first. Go.
All right. So, and especially here where we live, it's not necessarily possible to stop using your personal vehicle to get from point A to point B.
Right.
But of course, riding your bicycle or walking would be the best way to reduce your carbon footprint. But if that's not an option for you, the next best thing you can do is make sure your car has been well maintained and your tires are inflated to the right pressure. I hear it makes it run better and reduces your carbon footprint.
It does. It does. You know, I've noticed that too. It's like, you know, because I have a minivan.
I heard.
And I have to for you know, specific reasons, but it really does take the gas mileage, and it really keeps it going. Like, I'll notice, because I've even measured it, like I'll get like, say, to every like full tank of gas, I'll get like 375 miles, right. But when those tires aren't inflated just right, I'll usually get like 325 or sometimes even lower than that. So it's like I've just took 50 miles off of, and I'm burning this extra gas. And this is without running the air in this, you know, humid area in which we both live. We live in similar areas in different states, but very, very close. Right. So,
so something my parents always used to tell me when I was a kid too, to increase your gas mileage was to not carry around stuff you don't need in your car. So don't just have random boxes full of stuff you're waiting to take somewhere.
Exactly. Yeah. That's a really big thing. What's next on your list?
Okay. So the next one on my list is kind of a two-part, and it's to use reusable items instead of disposable items, which I know in America probably we're a little bit worse than everywhere else, especially about disposable dishware and flatware and all of those things. Everybody knows about the red plastic cups. Not everybody uses those all the time, but we do need to think about it. If we can avoid using something that's single use, it massively reduces the impact that we have. And that also applies to things like, instead of paper towels, using a washcloth, or instead of using single-use batteries, use rechargeable batteries. Although I hear it really only starts making a difference if you charge the battery more than 20 times. But after that, you're making a huge impact. So,
right.
Reusable, not disposable.
Yep, yep. And kind of like to piggyback on that too, I'm just going to throw in one of mine, and it's the using the reusable grocery bags, the canvas ones.
Oh, sure.
Those are some of the best ones that I've used, because you can fit so much more in just one bag.
Yep.
And what I usually do, because, okay, so when I first started doing this years ago, I used to always forget the bags and leave them home. And it's like, what was the purpose of that? And it's like, you look at the plastic bags, and then you're looking at those really bad ones that they sell in the stores that really aren't that much better than the plastic bags. So it's like, you know, so it's like I always keep them in my trunk or just somewhere in, you know, in my vehicle before I go to the store. So
if
I ever like walk to the store, oh, I forgot. Oh, no, it's in my trunk. So it's always there. And it's always, but those are some of the best things you can do.
Yeah.
Like that, you can fit so much more in them. And that's one of the biggest things, is like those plastic bags. And I see people like, well, I reuse them. And then, you know, they open up their cabinet under their sink, maybe in the kitchen or something, and they have all these plastic bags that are flowing out.
The bag of bags. It's
Right. It's like bags on top of bags, like the endless bags. It's ridiculous. But yeah, that's a huge huge thing you can do also. And what we're basically just trying to do tonight is just trying to pinpoint some really small things and point out some small things that you can really do easily in day to day, but things that are making huge impacts. And
right.
I think this is one of the best things that we can do, is just trying to just give out this, you know, these little nuggets of goodness of information here and there.
Now,
go ahead.
Now, in a past life, I may or may not have worked at a deli. And I'm telling you, if you walk up to the deli with a reusable container and you ask them to slice something into that instead of into a plastic bag, they'll happily do that for you. They'll weigh it beforehand before they put the meat in, or whatever it is you wanted to put in there. I don't eat meat, but you could get other stuff there. They'll be happy to give you your items in a reusable container. It's a minor inconvenience, but they would totally do that for you.
Right. And it's like the more you normalize just these little things that you're doing, and people start asking you, you start having these conversations. I remember, you know, when I used to do things like that, and people would, you know, ask, you know, why are you?
Yeah.
You know, just wondering, not being, you know, trying to, you know, shoehorn into your business, but they're just asking, you know, just wondering why, you know.
Because
I had one person, they would ask me that all the time, and, you know, just going to different locations, picking up things, and why I would have my own. It's like, this is why, and, you know.
Yeah.
So it's a really good place to be. But I'll tell you, whenever I would forget my reusable bags, and I'm talking about mostly like the canvas style bags, because so those, from what I've seen, those are some of the best ones. But they it really makes you not forget, and it really like reprograms your brain to like, don't forget this, and it becomes a part of your habit. And with me, I had to do that, because you're not going to be too happy when you're having to walk out of the store with all these things in your hand to dump them into your seat, because I've done that before.
Oh, look at you.
Yeah.
Maybe they give you a cardboard box or something for it.
Yeah. All the while, they're sitting there back in those big balers. Anyway, that's a whole other topic for another day. Because that was going to surely piggyback on Sell by Best Buy, you know, Fresh Buy dates. Anyway, go back to your topic, because that is a whole soapbox thing right there.
Sure. The next one on my list was temperature related. So a lot of us like our homes to be, oddly enough, in the winter, I like it a little hotter than I like it in the summer. In the summer, I like it a little colder than I like it in the winter. But if we switch that and we raise the temperature in our home in the summer, you know, make the air conditioning number just 2 degrees warmer, you'll get used to it. It won't ruin your life, but it makes a huge impact. And then 2 degrees cooler in the winter, you can drastically change your carbon footprint with really a minor inconvenience.
Okay, Michelle, what type of temperature are you talking about here? Because I'm going to play devil's advocate because I get hot. I get hot.
So. I get hot too. But I'm no hotter. I like it to be 72. So I like my summer temperature to be 72 degrees. I just think that's the sweet spot. But you know what? I'm still pretty comfortable at 74. So
Okay.
Give it a try.
Okay. Yeah, you know, I've gone as high as 74 before, and when it's 98 outside and it feels like you can throw a wet towel around your head, you're like, oh, you know?
Sure, but a minor inconvenience.
I'm pushing you here on this one, because this is one that I'm having a hard time doing myself. So this is why I'm pushing you so hard on this one. Look, I gotta adopt it because I'm telling other people to do it, so I've gotta do it myself. Right?
I'll remind you.
Now, in the wintertime, I have no problem doing that. I have no problem. That's already covered.
Winter.
I don't know. Maybe I can do some different window dressings or something like that to keep heat and keep the coolness in, you know.
And that's definitely an option, you know, when you're talking about insulating your home, that makes a huge difference.
Right.
And insulating your windows, and there are kits you can buy where you do a plastic glaze over the interior of your window and you use your hair dryer to snug it up. It makes a huge difference and it stops drafts, and it can be useful in summer or winter, you know, just get creative.
Okay, I'm going to do it. So everybody else has to do it as well. There you go. I'm sold.
Use a blanket, take off one more layer, you know, make minor adjustments.
Yeah. Did I mention I'm always hot? Okay. Anyway. we're gonna move on. All right. So I'm going to let you jump into your next one.
All right. So another one for me is always to buy used. And so that was one of the first things that I really got on board with, was you can buy fashionable clothes that fit you, that you like, that are basically your style, but that were already owned by someone else. And they can be in great shape. And they can drastically reduce. So for example, if you bought a pair of used blue jeans instead of brand new, you reduced your fresh water consumption by like 750 glasses of fresh drinking water.
That's
a pretty staggering number. If you were unaware that the manufacturing process really does, it can be labor intensive, it can be energy intensive, definitely water intensive. And then the amount of waste coming off of fast fashion can be pretty staggering as well. So I like to rescue as much as I can from the landfill and slow down the production if we can for some of that new stuff. But that applies to other stuff too. If you can avoid buying brand new things and you can get something that's gently used, it could apply to, you know, technology items, electronics. It could be dishware or shoes. I mean, the sky's the limit. So
yeah. And for me, you know, being a gardener, for food waste, a lot of my points here are going to come from that region because it has a lot to do with climate change in general, food waste, because that's one of the biggest aspects of why it's such an issue, such a problem is the food waste and going into the landfills and ethanol, you know, all of that. And it just causes so many different issues.
Sure. And I think it's really easy to throw something away and never think about it again. But really, throwing it away didn't make it go away. And so there is a journey past your trash can for everything you put in there. So we do be more cognizant of our impact when we put things in that trash can.
Yeah. You know what I was going to, okay, so I'm going to go back to what I was going to say about the Best Buy sell by dates, so, you know.
Oh yeah.
Expiration dates on the food. That is the number one spot where a lot of food waste comes from. I mean, a huge percentage of it comes from that, because people figure out, oh, well, something is not good, and, you know, in the refrigerator they see it and it's like, no, that's just a freshness, that's just for the manufacturers or whatever foods you're buying. You know, hopefully most of it is fresh food, but if it's not, you know, it's just to get you to buy more of that food. It's like, oh, right, it's not precious. You toss it out and you just, you know, you buy more of that same thing.
And now, like, have you ever noticed on one of those packages where it says use or freeze by date? A lot of that stuff can be frozen, which is nice.
So it's coming up
on that date, just pop it in the freezer and use it later.
Exactly. Yeah. Yep. That's a big factor.
Yep. But, you know, a freezer is complicated too. If it's not going to be full, you may not need it.
Right. Yep. That's a lot of electricity and, you know, phantom. Yeah. Yeah. It's a lot of that phantom electricity just going out the window.
I guess it's all about balance.
Yep. Balance is definitely a big thing. All right. It's still on you.
Okay. This one might be a little controversial for some people, but let's talk about your showers.
I love controversy. Yes.
You may not need as many showers every week as you think you do.
No, you don't. No.
Something to consider. And your hair will adjust, and your skin will adjust, and your water will adjust. And then another thing is, if you're going to be taking a shower, make it like a camp shower. So when I was growing up, we would go camping and you had a very, very limited amount of hot water. And so you got into the shower, you got wet, you shampooed up, you soaped up, and then you hosed it off. And then you, if you needed conditioner, you needed to shave, whatever it was, then you did those things. And then you did a final rinse and you got out. You know, plan your shower to use considerably less water. Heating the water is a huge carbon impact. If you're using, if you have a propane water heater, or even if you have an electric water heater, depending on the source of your electricity, you know, that's still something to consider. And then, you know, just the cost of that fresh water to the planet as well is really complicated. So I advocate for the shorter shower, the camper shower, and a lot less showers. And honestly, it impacted my hygiene in any way. So,
okay. So saying less showers, what would you like, how many showers would you say?
So if you were an athletic person and you're spending time working out and you're planning ahead for your day, work out when it's cooler outside or whatever. If you are dripping with sweat and you are smelly and you need a shower, go take a shower.
But, right.
But if it was a light workout and you're just going home to make dinner and you weren't gonna, you know, you didn't have anybody to impress tonight, you can put your hair up in a ponytail and wait till tomorrow. I mean, your best judgment will work for you, but we have some people with eczema in my house, and a shower every day makes their skin just drier than dry. And a lot of people probably have similar skin problems that they're not even aware of, because they've been told that they need this many showers or they're not clean. Literally, just sniff yourself. You know whether you need a shower. If you feel grimy, wash yourself off. Maybe you can get by with just washing your face and brushing your hair, and suddenly you feel fresh again. So, you know, consider ways to spend less time in that bathroom and more time out in the fresh air. And, you know, it doesn't have to be one thing or another thing. Just make your own choices on that.
Okay, so I'm going to tell a little bit about myself, okay? And everyone is hearing this for the first time.
I believe you.
Everyone. Okay, so the amount of showers I take a week, well, I'm not going to divulge that. But what I'm going to say is that, like you were just saying about just washing face, certain parts of your anatomy, you know, just doing that on a daily basis and, you know, just taking those showers on those, you know, certain days, usually beginning of the week, midweek, usually towards the end of the week, and those days in between, you know, you're like my mom used to say, kind of like showering at the sink, you know what I mean? So it's kind of like that whole thing. So I find that a lot of people, you know, it's like, I don't know, I don't know if I can do that, but, you know, it's like, just imagine if everyone in just the U.S. did that all the time. How much water would be saved?
Yeah, you know,
just doing that, but yeah,
for sure. And I think that that's just something to be aware of. If you don't need it, just wait.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so I'm going to jump into a few of mine, and like I said, most of them are surrounding gardening or
just,
you know, something in that world. And the first one for me is going to be join a CSA. And if you don't know what that is, that's basically a community supported agriculture, and basically what you're doing, you're supporting local farmers and just everyone that's basically that helps you to eat with the seasons and helps to reduce food waste, and you know, and basically how this works is you pay for shares at the beginning of the season to the farmers themselves, and preferably local farmers. And then once you do that, you will get a food box that will be delivered, or you can go to the farm and you can actually pick at the beginning of the season or whatever time, you know, the produce is ready, whenever the harvest is ready for you to go get. And then sometimes they will let you go and glean from their farm as well. So you get extra veggies, and you always get a mixture of different veggies during whatever, you know, during whatever part of the season that, you know, they have the harvest coming to, you know. And it's just a really good program, and it really helps out local small farmers and everyone. And you're eating with the seasons, and the food is a lot cheaper that way. Yeah. And I found, another one is eating with the seasons, kind of like to piggyback on that a little bit. And, you know, but what I found is the food tastes better and there are good prices as well.
Yeah.
And it just helps so much. Like just having a home garden, you know, I noticed that just the taste in things, just it there's no comparing a store tomato versus a, you know, backyard right off the vine, just got kissed by the sun tomato. But I know everyone can't do that and everyone's not in a situation to do that. But it's like, if you can support those that are growing on their farms or supporting, you know, a CSA or going to the farmer's market, that's another area where you can do that. That's another great option as well. Okay, so another one of the areas, and it goes to growing flowers and things like that. It's using or planting perennials instead of annuals.
Sure. Okay.
Annuals for me is, you know, from what I've noticed, you have to replant those every single year, and they take more water and they're not as resilient, and you just have to keep going back and forth. And what I've learned with perennials over the couple decades, aging myself here a little bit, but what I've learned is that most of them will last, I mean, an extremely long time, most a minimum of 9 years. So once you have those in, you can actually keep cutting from them and adding more plants and more if you want more of that. It's just you don't have to water them as much. They don't need as many nutrients, so they're not depleting the soil, which the soil is it's a really big thing as far as, like, you know, just taking care of the planet or just your garden, which is a part of the planet, right? So, you know, or whatever you have, whether it's container or whatever the case may be, I found that is a really great area to really invest in up front. Fruit trees, if you know, and it doesn't have to be these large fruit trees, because they have these dwarf fruit trees as well, small ones, just little things. Or if you want to have this crop that, you know, keeps coming back again and again, like I just planted asparagus a couple of years ago, and they are coming back again. I had to wait like 2 years, but this is the fourth year. This is the fourth season I've had them. I mean, I got a crop last year, and I'm getting one now. So it's like, I'm loving that. And it's like, that's something that I eat all the time anyway. So it's a wonderful thing to have. But like I said, all these perennials, they just really, really work well in your landscape. And if you have, you know, maybe, what is it, a homeowners, if you have like one of those associations and you're trying to incorporate some things into your garden or into your landscape, and you want it to, you want to have those flowers, but you want to have those berries as well, and you're drawing bees or birds and all the other without it being too intrusive, that's a great way to get around that.
I like that a lot. I like functional beauty in my yard. So that's good. I have a question though. I had heard, and I'm not a garden expert, not anything like you, but I heard that covering your fresh plants that you've just put in with mulch or something like that also makes them, like, you don't need to water them as much, maybe something like that.
Yep. It keeps the evaporation from, it keeps the water from evaporating up into the air, especially during the times of year where you have a lot of sun or you have a lot of sun exposure. It keeps it down. It keeps that moisture in the ground at the root levels. It keeps it from evaporating during the day. And I'll tell you one thing on that. If you have to water, what I do to conserve water as well, and this is kind of like piggybacking off of that as well, is watering at night. And I know a lot of people are like, oh, you can water anytime. No, water at night, because when you water, especially during the summertime, drought, you know, times, you can water at night because it won't evaporate away and you have it all night long and it soaks thoroughly, especially when you have mulch. Whatever kind of mulch you're using, or compost and then mulch, that really helps out as well, which the compost is next on my list. We'll talk about it in a second. But we really dive into this, that soil, it just retains all of that moisture, and it really gets deep down a couple inches in most cases. And you don't have to worry about watering during the day, because during the daytime, it has all the water it needs. And if, you know, you've really taken care of your soil the way it should be, you know, taken care of. And like I said, this is all leading back to taking, you know, using less water. Yeah. That's basically what it's all going back to. So yeah, it really helps water at night. And I was like, why are you watering at 8, 9 o'clock at night? Because it works, because it has from 9 o'clock at night or whatever time at night, all the way until the next morning. And your plants are going to grow during the daytime when it's getting that full sun. It's already got the water it needs. It's not trying to, you know, trying to compete with the sun and not being evaporated, even when you have the mulch, because it will evaporate a little bit. But when it's already soaked down in there, you don't have to worry about that at all.
Okay. Nice. Yeah,
that's a fun little thing I'd like to do. Because I've had debates with people in the past, and we've like, I'm a morning water. I'm a night. That's like, well, let me show you. You've only got this certain amount of time if you're going out into your garden in the morning, but you had the entire night. For me, it just makes more sense. I mean, everybody has their way of doing things, and you know, for me, it's like it was using less water. There's less bugs. There's less heat. There's less of all these things. So for me, it just works better doing it that way. Okay. Now, if you're in another region, it may work differently. Like if you're in upstate New York, maybe a little bit different, right? You know, but for me here in this area and regions, it works better. Okay. All right. I've gone on too long about that. Jumped into compost. Compost, basically, you know, and I'm not going to jump back on the sell by Best Buy dates again. I swear I'm not going to do it. Can you see me just wanting to really dive into that a little bit?
I see it.
I'm showing some restraint here, a lot of restraint. But you know, compost, it helps with food waste, which a lot of that, I mean, there's like 20% of everything that's in landfills is from food waste, and it's mostly from veggies. It's not from restaurant foods, which a lot of that's a whole another number and statistic all by itself. Just food that's coming out of people's either their the restaurants, they're throwing out salads, or grocery stores throwing out salads, or food from people's homes, like veggies that just went bad because they bought too much. That's most of
it happens.
Oh, it happens. So I'm like, okay, so I'm not gonna throw it into into my garbage. I'm gonna throw it into my compost pile.
Is there ever a time when it's not okay? My veggies are too far gone. I can't put them in the compost.
Oh no, it's fine. It's fine. They could be the slimy little at the bottom. You can throw it right in there. Yeah, it works because all you need is the carbon and nitrogen. The carbon is all the brown elements, and the nitrogen is all the green things, which is mostly, it's mostly like all the veggies. And of course, it goes with coffee grinds as well, because that's actually from a berry. And you can really follow that trail. But yeah, that's actually nitrogen as well. So you don't want to add too much coffee grounds to your compost pile, because that'll throw the pH balance of it off, and you'll be fighting with that. But there's a lot of elements that go into a compost pile. But I have an episode on the on composting itself, and I'll have that in the show notes later on, so you can check that out. But yeah, that's fun.
Hey.
All right. So okay. So I said this to you before the show. That's a little bit behind. I was talking about buy single bananas. And you're like, okay. What? What?
Okay, so here
it goes. Okay, so I don't know. You ever notice how when you go into the stores, right? And this is going right along with my next thing. It's going to be ugly fruit. I'm covering a whole bunch of topics all at once, trying to get a little bit more of it in. Right, but you know how you go into the grocery stores and they get bananas, and sometimes they'll just, I don't like the way that one looks, or it has a little brown spot or something on it. And they'll peel it off, right? Or
you only needed four, Tony.
Yeah, or you only needed four, and you're peeling these bananas off. And then people, what do they do?
Well, they buy the bunches and they remove one.
Yeah, or they usually just pass over that one or two that's sitting there. That's like, why is that by itself? You know, it's like discarded. You know, so what I've done in the past, because I love bananas in my smoothies. That's a thing all of itself. I'll go in and I'll just get all the single or one or two bananas that are together and just get those, because what I've found is that they actually, because no one will buy them, and they will sit there and they will sit there and they will sit there, and then eventually they'll be so brown, no one definitely won't buy them. And they wind up going to the back into, they have this huge produce bin in the back, and that usually just get thrown, it usually gets thrown into the dumpster.
But fun fact,
yep.
If you store your bananas not attached to each other, turn brown slower. So it's in too.
Yep. And I found that to be so funny. It's like, but you can save so many thousands of bananas that will be, garbage bin bound. I've found that to be so fulfilling, just to go in and just save all these bananas. I'm your saver. I'm coming in.
Banana. Need I say more?
Right. Oh, and buying ugly fruit. That was the other thing I was going to jump onto. So buying ugly fruit, it's like, and it's not ugly fruit. It all tastes, pretty good if you're buying in the stores. And or if you're at the farmer's market, you see the produce or fruit or whatever that people are kind of like passing over, and they're going around these trying to find these perfect, which I think a lot of what we see on these fronts of magazine covers or wherever or whatever you're seeing on TV, all that stuff is airbrushed, and it's marketing ploys to get you to buy these things that are perfect. In reality, if you've ever seen a tomato that has grown, you'll get some perfect tomatoes in the home garden. I won't say that that's not possible, but for the most part, you'll get these times where, like, we just recently had a lot of rain, and had I had tomatoes that were almost ready to ripen and they got that full, 2-3 inches of rain, it would cause them to split at the top, because because basically they're growing from the inside out. So it's getting all that water, and tomatoes, they grow really fast during certain times of the season. So it's like when you see those type of blemishes on your tomatoes or whatever fruit that you're buying, tomato is a fruit, But
okay,
I'll always have to say that because everybody always loves men with vegetables. But anyway, but it's
got it.
But yeah, just you save so much. You know, there's a lot of companies now that are starting to do that. They're starting to get the, you know, what they call ugly produce and just buying these things, and people, because they taste the same, and for the most part, they taste so much better. Right. But I found that to be great. All right, so going native, that's next on my my list. And I mean, going hand in hand what I was talking about with the perennials. So when you have native, you know, plants that are native to your area, they don't need all of the requirements such as a lot of water or care, and they're more resilient, just like those perennials I was talking about before. And it's just so much that you can do with those native, and you don't, like I say, you don't have to baby them as much. You can just grow, and they're just as beautiful, and there's nothing wrong with them, and it helps with the environment overall. I mean when you have something that is supposed to be there, it not only, you know, it flourishes, it thrives, and it's beautiful, and it really invites those birds that are local to the area, because birds are always local, right? You know, and it's like it draws those in. It's like, oh, this is what I'm supposed to be eating. This is here. But if they're having to go from this new plant that they've never seen, it disrupts the whole ecosystem. And that's a whole nother topic for another day. But anyway, that's all I'm going to say on that, because I can talk on that for 45 minutes. Is there anything else you wanted to jump in and add? Because I think I'm going to stop right here, because I can keep going all night.
No, I think that there was a time when people wanted what they had from wherever they came from, and they brought other plants with them. What do we do about those plants that maybe were never meant to be native but have been here for hundreds of years?
I think those are fine. I've made my peace with that. It's like, okay, they've been here for 100 years.
You know? Sure.
As far as I'm concerned, they're now native.
Like, you know? Blackberries, not native to here.
Tomatoes, but I mean, everywhere. Not native to here.
Okay, now.
I mean, we go on and on down the list of basically everything we have that we eat here in the U.S. I mean,
I was concerned we were going to have very, very limited options for our yard.
Yeah. Okay. So, okay. Let me be clear. What I'm talking about is mainly plant species. And when I'm saying plant, I'm talking about like certain trees that are non-fruit bearing, as far as like fruit that we can actually eat. Right. Things like that, like azaleas, you know, although I must admit I have bought a lot of non-native things in the past, but they're already incorporated into my garden. I already have them. They've been established for, you know, several years. So I'm just not going to pull them out like, nope, you're not local. Sorry.
No. You have to.
No, not gonna do that. I'm gonna keep them there, right?
Sure.
But if you, once you know, then you start adjusting and changing your habits from that point forward. Yeah. And like I said, a lot of that is a part of just our whole ecosystem and just disrupting. I mean, a lot of that stuff too. It disrupts the soil, you know, composition, and just, I mean, there's so many different things. Like I said, these are topics that we're definitely gonna jump into and deeper detail later on, but I just wanted to jump into, you know, what we can do as far as right now.
Okay. I like
it. It's like tomorrow I can go out, I can do that. Tomorrow, Saturday, boom, I can go out, I can start doing all these things like right now, right?
Yeah.
Right. There was another one I think we were talking about before. It was on production of beef.
Oh, sure. I've heard that. Yeah.
I'll let you talk about that one. I'll let you go.
Okay.
You got another 10 minutes.
Ironically enough, the reason I went vegan actually wasn't originally meant to be the issue at all. Like, I kind of just choose a cause du jour. And one year I got it in my head that I needed to reduce my carbon footprint and stop using fresh water with impunity. And no matter how many tiny changes I made, it never changed the needle nearly as much as cutting out ruminants from my diet. And so no dairy foods and no red meats, no mass produced animals, because the water consumption for a feedlot full of cattle is really, really high. And then of course there's other side impacts from that also impact your carbon
usage too, right? Yeah.
And a lot of it, if you can afford to buy the beef, it's coming from somewhere far away and get shipped here. And you could buy local, but honestly, you know, for a lot of people, that's just, it's cost prohibitive. And so cutting meat out of your diet reduces your carbon footprint drastically.
Right.
If you can't do that every day, just try doing it one day a week or 2 days. Meatless Mondays are a thing, and just give it a try and see if it's such a big deal. And if it's not, just keep it up, because it is changing your impact on the planet around you.
Yeah. That's a huge thing. That was actually, you know, one of the first things I cut out when I stopped eating meat was pork. And I was, I stopped that. And then there was like these little things here and there. Okay, I don't get pork. That's a whole bunch of different kinds of meat, whether it's ham or whatever.
And then, it's a lot of stuff.
Yeah. And it's not good for you. It's really not. Mm-mm. But I found it to be interesting. You know, I went down the whole path of being, you know, vegetarian, and you know, everyone listening to this podcast, they know a lot of the stories I've told several times, but I've just went down from being vegetarian and going back and forth with that. And then, you know, going out with friends that I know to, you know, to hunt for my own meat so that I'm getting it from these different places. And for me, that was justification. And for a lot of people, that still is a big justification. It's like, oh yeah, we're going to do deer because they're, you know, during this time and then this, and you know,
right.
And, I mean, it may be fine, you know, in certain, but for the most part, yeah, I'm just not on board with it, you know, because it, you know, like you said, it takes so much water, and I mean, you know, fossil fuel. I mean, just transporting that stuff from state to state, because you know, a lot of it is coming from these, you know, large ranch states. I'm not gonna you know, single out any single state or states, but we all know where most of the stuff is coming from.
It's
just not good for the planet. You know, I always point back to, you know, back to the pandemic and how we saw where there was a lot of trucks on the road, and just how fast you saw those pictures of before and after of different places all around the world, where we just stopped in just a short period of time, and we saw the effects, the positive effects that had. It's like, just imagine we could just do this. You know, I was talking to someone the other day, and I meant to mention this to you when I was talking to you, but it was like, just imagine if everyone just, I mean, because there's no such thing as 100% vegan, right? It's like because, you know, whether it's the bone meal in your organic fertilizer or whatever you're using, or the manure that's going to, somehow, some way, those nutrients from that animal are getting in, even into your veggies. And it's like, there's no such thing as a perfect, but we can always do a little bit more. And I'm like, just imagine everyone just was like, yeah, I'm going to be vegan for 2 days. Everyone in the United States just said, yeah, I'm going to be vegan just for 2 days a week. Just imagine how much of an impact that would make.
Yeah. And if you don't come from a region where farming is ubiquitous, you may not realize the way that farming impacts a community. And so, you know, I come from a place where I grew up. There was a very famous ice cream and cheese manufacturer, but literally it was so hard to have enough cattle in the area to produce that dairy that they could have the volume they needed for the company to succeed and grow. And eventually it got to a place where it had made the groundwater so toxic that they couldn't even raise cattle on that land anymore, because it was impacting the planet in such a big way. And so you have to kind of look at that and think, should I be supporting a company that is so big, they can't help but have an impact. And so really think about ways that you can, you know, understand that cost and reduce that cost and see if you can find something that's good enough or a close replica if you have to have it, that maybe yep. doesn't cost quite what dairy would cost or beef would cost or pork to the community around those farms and to the planet in terms of your carbon footprint and your water intake. So,
yep, exactly. Exactly. Well, I think that was a great first part. We're definitely going to come back for a second part.
Oh, good. I have more.
Oh, I have more too. So much more. Well, as usual, thank you for coming on the pod and talking with me. I really enjoy these conversations. I'm thinking that everyone else enjoys them as well.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
All right. Is there anything else you would like to throw out there before we close the door?
Are we supposed to ask for questions every time?
They're already there.
If it brought questions to mind, send them our way. So
there you go. There you go. See, she's going to be taking over the show soon. That's what you guys want anyway.
World.
All right. Well, thanks. And this has been Tony for Michelle. Okay. And this has been the Grounded Podcast. Bye-bye.
Hey everybody, this is Tony with the Grounded Podcast. Make sure to follow and share the show. Share the show via your social media, friends, and family. And leave a 5 or 4 star review to help us move up in the charts. And by the way, stars 1 through 3 no longer work. Another way you can help the podcast to grow is by subscribing to the podcast for just $2.99 a month. Just basically the cost of a cup of coffee, right? And you can also follow us on Instagram @groundedpodcast_. Thank you. Thank you so much.